Welcome to Jaipur Bites. I'm your host, Laksh Datta.
This episode is a live session from day 4 of Jaipur Lit Fest 2023. And it's called Noor Inayat Khan, Enemy of the Reich. Rick Stroud and Shrabani Basu in conversation.
Okay, hello everybody. Thank you for that very nice introduction to both of us. Shrabani and I are both interested in the military, we're both interested in war, and we've both written about this wonderful woman, inspiring woman called Noor Inayat Khan. We'll spend about 20 minutes talking together, hearing what Shrabani's got to say about her and her wonderful book. If there's time, we'll have some questions. But just as a bit of background, at the beginning of the war, Churchill... The United Kingdom was in a very bad state, and Churchill said set Europe ablaze, and he liked sort of secret armies and all that sort of thing, and they formed an organization called the Special Operations Executive, and they chose anybody with a sort of slightly weird way of thinking. They found bankers, they found burglars, they found lawyers, they found pimps. I mean, anybody who might try and undermine the Nazis in Europe. And the recruitment was done by a man called Selwyn Jepson. And he went around trying to find people who could speak French, who were French. And slowly he began to think, this is all very well, but there are no women. I'm not being asked to recruit women. And when he said to his superiors in the Special Operations Executive, the SOE, why don't we have women? They went, oh, no, you don't. Women would be no good at this job. We don't want women. He was so worried by this that he went to see the English Prime Minister, Winston Churchill, and he said, Prime Minister, I think that women have a far greater capacity for cool and lonely courage than men, and I want to start recruiting them. And the Prime Minister looked at him and went, yes, I agree. Good luck. And so he began to look for Francophile, French-speaking women, and he found them in all stratas of society. He found a shop assistant, a woman called Andre Bonnell. He found a Polish aristocrat. He found a New Zealand journalist. He found a woman who was working in London, and he found Noor Inayat Khan. And these women were all trained in secret, penetrate into France to work radios and what have you. And one of the people that trained them was called Leo Marx. And before we get going, I'm just going to, if I can do it, read a poem that Leo Marx, if you take that out, that's great. A poem that Leo Marx wrote for Violette Szabo, which for me sort of sums up a lot of the feeling of these women. The poem was not just because he thought she was lovely. The poem was part of her cryptographical equipment, which it was used to make codes. And it goes, the life that I have is all that I have, and the life that I have is yours. The love that I have of the life that I have is yours and yours and yours. A sleep I shall have, a rest I shall have, yet death will be but a pause. For the peace of my years in the long green grass will be yours and yours and yours. And Violette Szabo was captured and died. I think that's quite enough for me, so I'd like now to ask Shrabani, what happened when Noor was recruited?
Right. Thanks everybody. It's just lovely to be here with Rick and with all of you. Noor, let me show you what Noor looks like. So that's Noor. She was beautiful. And who was she? She was born in Moscow. She lived a bit in England, in London, and then family went to Paris, where they settled in this beautiful house called Fazl Manzil. Now, Noor's father was Hazrat Inayat Khan. Those of you who are from Delhi will know there is Inayat Mosque. His dargah is actually Nizamuddin as well. So she was from a Sufi family. Her mother was American, father was Indian. Born in Moscow, London, and then Paris is where she grows up. The house is full of music and meditation. It is an open house with Sufis coming and going. She's a writer of children's stories. She's a dreamer. She's a musician. She goes to the Sorbonne. She learns to play the harp. She learns to play the veena. She wants to learn Sanskrit. And she starts publishing her children's stories. And her first book is published in 1939. And of course, we know what's going to happen. So the war clouds are gathering, and all the hopes of this budding young writer, this dreamer, suddenly squashed. And she and her brother, the German army is just outside Paris in 1940, and she and her brother, they sit in this beautiful oriental room looking over the lights of Paris, and they say, "We can't stand by and watch. We are nonviolent. We believe in nonviolence, but we've got to do something." So, you know, the family, Tipu is descended from Tipu Sultan. So she had this, right through her childhood, she would be told that you have the blood of Tipu Sultan in your veins. So there was, along with being a dreamer, there was a side to her that was really steely and, a determination to fight for the right cause. So they decide they're going to go to London, they're going to go to UK, and they're going to volunteer for the war effort. So the family packs up, join all the refugees fleeing, go to London. London in the Blitz, bombed out. Vilayat says, "I'm going to join the RAF. Noor just wants to follow her brother. Says, "I'll join the Women's Auxiliary Air Force, which is the women's branch." So off she goes. And this photograph of hers is in her Women's Air Force uniform. Suddenly, she's just a number, and she loves it, actually. She's sleeping in the huts with the other women. She's practicing her Morse code because she's training as a radio operator. And if we have time in this brief session, I'll tell you why the radio is so important and so crucial in this war. So she's training, she's practicing her Morse, but she is being watched by what Rick just said, this secret organization called the SOE. And they are looking for people with wireless skills. They're looking for people who know French. She speaks fluent French, like a native. She knows the area well. And so she is just perfect for this job. She is interviewed. Her interview is the shortest ever. They tell her, "You will be sent as a secret agent. You will not have the protection of uniform. If you are caught, you'll be shot. Will you take the job?" And she says, "Yes." So this is the start of her career in the SOE. Now she's a trained, very good wireless operator, but she has to now train for the Secret Service. So it's a life of deception. She's suddenly learning. She has to learn, train in firearms, how to break locks, how to give messages. Her training starts across country schools, across UK, and she's given the name Madeleine. She has a code name. She has several aliases, and she practices her signature. And on a full moon night, she's put on this plane, and she is just a few months of training, really. She's off, dropped into the most dangerous area in Europe, in Paris, occupied by the Gestapo, informers on all sides, curfews, and she has to survive in this. So I'll leave it there for the next bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what happened, and what Trevney says, that without radios, you're blind and deaf, you can't receive information, and as crucially, you can't send information back, so you're useless. And Noor Khan was called, her nickname was Bang Away Lulu, because she was very noisy as she worked the radio. There were those who thought that she hadn't been properly trained, and they said, "We don't think she should be sent in." And indeed, one of the organisers said to her, "Look, on the night before she left, if you want to back out now, you can do that." But she didn't. As Shrabani said, she was flown in by Lysander. She's in the most dangerous place in Europe, and they're out to get you. The slightest slip will betray you. And what she didn't realise is that the organisation she was working for had already been penetrated by a Frenchman called Henri Dericourt. He was working for the Gestapo. He had a Gestapo number. He was being paid by them. He saw Noor landing, and he was reporting back to the Gestapo in Paris everything about her. And for I don't know how many months was it, Shravani, that she operated for?
She operated for 3 months. But within a week of her landing, her circuit is blown. They used to say, you know, circuit is blown means you're exposed, basically. All her circuit master, the other wireless operator, everybody, the courier, all arrested. Gestapo sweep, they've all gone. London writes to her, her chief buckmaster says, come back, it's very dangerous, we'll organize a flight and get you out. And of course, Noor, she writes back. She says, no, I'm the only one left in Paris. I'm going to rebuild the circuit and I'm going to continue doing this crucial work. And Buckmaster writes later that he accepted her sacrifice. So she is there. She starts doing the work of 6 radio operators rolled in one. She starts working with other French resistance, giving them arms, giving them training, giving them dropping money, you know, just meeting clandestinely, X marks the spot, etc. Meeting them, giving them the funds, and of course, transmitting messages. So within months of this, within weeks, she's back on air, sending her messages, and they are receiving her loud and clear. And they are thrilled that she is managing to survive. She does this in a really dangerous way. I don't know, what's the clock saying, Ray?
It's eight, we've got 8 minutes left.
Oh my God, dash on. Well, I'll tell them one quick story, very quickly. So this wireless is really heavy to carry. You have this long aerial you have to put out, and it's really dangerous because you can be hurt, you could be spotted, the German vans will catch you. And one day she has to put out a message. She puts up this wireless aerial right outside her house on the flat. And suddenly there's somebody behind her. And he says, excuse me, mademoiselle. And she turns around. It's an SS officer who lives in the same flats. And what does she say? She puts on all her charm and she says, oh, I just wanted to listen to a radio station. Very cleverly names a band radio station, a music station. So he thinks, okay, she's, you know, he's melting. She's so beautiful. And he just says, oh, that's okay. I'll help you put it up, madam. This guy puts it up on the tree and he has no idea. Half an hour later, she's transmitting to London. So that was her. But it's not going to end well because she is betrayed.
She is betrayed, and what she doesn't realize is that the man that Trevin has just spoken about, Buckmaster, who's meant to be running the whole organization, doesn't really know what he's doing. And I think, should we go on to her being arrested? When she's arrested, her radio, her wireless, is taken over by the Germans, who use it to transmit false information to London. London goes, we're a bit worried about this, Buckmaster, we're not sure. And he says, no, it's perfectly all right. Madeline is operating. She's perfectly safe. There's no problem. Mm-hmm. But there is a huge problem because she's been turned into what they call a night and fog prisoner, mm-hmm. which means that as far as the Nazis are concerned, as far as Nazi Germany is concerned, she must be made to disappear with no trace. And mm-hmm. tell us, Shravani, about yeah. the awful
so
way she's kept.
She's arrested. She's taken to the Gestapo headquarters on Avenue Foch, one of those posh areas. She makes 2 escape attempts. Can't go into it. There's no time. You have to read the book. And she then, because she's made 2 escape attempts, she's classified under this thing called Nacht und Nebel, which is night and fog. It actually is code for return not required. And then she's sent to Forzheim camp, a camp for prisoners where she is kept shackled for 10 months. There's a chain between her hands, there's a chain between her legs, there's another chain passing through. She can't feed herself, clean herself. 10 months she is beaten, tortured, interrogated, and at the end of it, she reveals nothing, not even her real name. They know her only as Nora Baker. And then they take her to Dachau, to the concentration camp. And all night, she is tortured. And finally, there is this sadistic SS officer who puts her in front, you know, just points his gun at her and shoots her point blank. But Noor is Noor. She goes down screaming, Liberté. So, you know, they can't break her spirit.
It's a wonderful story. And Shrabani has not... I mean, the full horror was that this German officer was told the night before, give the Creole the works. And he said, by the time I'd finished with her, she was a bloody mess. And so that gives you a horrific insight into what happened to her that night and over that terrible period. Mm-hmm. But She can never have thought that her liberté, that wonderful phrase, wonderful word, would have gone beyond the stone walls of her prison. But we were both present in London, at London University SOAS, when the Noor Khan inaugural, it's breaking me up, liberté lecture was given. So 60 years after she was murdered, that her spirit prevailed. And it shows us, however weak we feel, however battered we feel by the forces of authority, what we do as weak little individuals matters. And Noor Khan set a very high moral bar for us to live up to.
So in London, you know, nobody really knew her story. After the book came out, there was a lot of reaction. But I felt it, you know, we needed more. So I campaigned for a memorial for her. And there is a memorial. It's the first memorial to an Indian woman in London. And it was unveiled by Princess Anne. And we have Liberté written there. And then we raised so much money. People really gave generously for this. So we started, we gave a prize in SOAS, which is there. And then I thought, how do you make it relevant for the next generation? So we started the Liberté series of talks based on her last words, because we live in a world where these problems are still continuing. You know, fascism is on the rise, human rights. So we invited Vrinda Grover, a human rights lawyer, to come. Arundhati Roy gave one of the Liberté lectures. So it's all wonderful. Gone really well. But yeah, so her legacy continues. People, if you ever go to London, go to Bloomsbury, see the memorial.
It's very moving, and it's well worth it. We're coming to the end of our time. Before we do come to the end of our time, we'll try and have a couple of questions, but Shrevani's got this wonderful aid memoir that Noor wrote. Tell, set you said.
Yeah, so I'm in touch with her family, and they said that they'd found some lines that she had written recently in the family house, and they sent it to me. And I think these were written in her early 20s. The original was in French, but this is what it is. It's actually called Thoughts That Help Me in Life. And just picture Noor, probably in early 20s, writing this. In my moments of despair, I remember that God is too good to want to inflict hardship and great suffering upon us. Hard times are necessary to make us aware of happiness in life. Just as light is born from darkness, so joy is born from suffering. Is one lost, distraught? This is when one can achieve something great. Does effort seem to yield no result? There is always a result. Is the darkness still there? No, it is dissipating. And it's signed Noor-un-Nisa Inayat Khan.
And the young woman who wrote that can never have imagined the darkness that was awaiting for her down the road of life.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Jaipur Bites. I'm your host, Laksh Datta. This podcast is produced by Launchora in association with Teamwork Arts. Please follow or subscribe to this show wherever you're listening to this to be notified about new episodes.